Blog Talk Radio.
Hit one.
I'm there.
Yeah. Okay, so that didn't work. All right, what's your email address, Reggie? Yeah, I emailed you. It should give you a way to get in on it. Yeah, hit that. Oh, hit allow. Hello? There you go. Okay, I put you in the screener. I don't know if I did put you in the screener. Yeah, I got you on here. I can see it on here. I just I'm trying to figure out how to put you in the screener room. Let's see. Aha. Okay. Okay. Okay, I'm just going to screen. We'll do it a different way next time. But you have to log in as the host to be able to screen. And you're a guest caller. So what I could do is I could put you, like, I put you in the screener room.
Is your volume up on your computer? Can you hear me on my computer? You should be able to hear me.
I kept my sound turned on the way up. But I heard a beep. Okay. I heard myself. I can hear myself.
Can you hear me? Yeah, you can hear me. Okay, let me try to put you in the screener room. Can you hear me now? Still can't hear me, can you? Aha.
I can kick people over to you. I can kick, you're in the screener room, and I can kick people over to you.
I have to kick them back to you.
And you have to kick them back to me. Can you close this out? Not in call. But click on. Click on this. Don't click on it. There you go. So see, you're in the screener room. That's you. You're in the screener room. And so when somebody calls in, I can kick them right to the screener room, and you can talk to them.
Okay.
And then you, when somebody calls in, you can kick them. You can.
That's you.
Yeah, you can just. You can. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, you can kick them back to me once you talk to them.
Okay. So how do you tell me?
They'll just show. It'll be on this. The call will come in, and then I'll hit this button. And when it's on this green button, that's when you can talk to them.
Right.
You got that?
And then
hit this button to kick them back to me.
Okay. But how do you then do? All right. And so you just, then you'll see that light up on your screen.
Yes.
And you'll know that I've done that.
Yes. And if you can't get it to click on that, just holler at me from in there, and I'll kick them back to me. But I think you should be able to kick them back to me.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
All right.
Go in there and set up and pull the power in.
All right.
No, you're on the regular one. I'm on the
No, that's me. Thank you.
All right, try talking into it. Yeah. It's got a mic on it.
Nothing. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Young Patriots Organization's official podcast, When the World is on Fire. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. If you want to get in touch with us, like us on Facebook, the Young Patriots Organization, the Young Patriots Organization Birmingham, or check out my content page, Confessions of a Mad Redneck. And today we're going to have a special guest, Aaron Dixon, who was a Seattle Black Panther. And we'll also have Hi Thurman, who is an original Young Patriots member in Chicago, talking to us about the work that they've done. And I'm going to put Hi on right now. Hello, Hi.
Hello.
How you doing? Hello, Hi.
I'm doing great, buddy. And you?
I'm doing pretty good. You want to tell us a little bit about the Young Patriots?
The Young Patriots we created the Young Patriots back in the spring of 1969 in the Chicago area. Of Uptown, which was a neighborhood that was Southern whites at the time. We were teenagers, migrants, and were core members, publicizing the problems in the community, resolving daily and chronic problems of the poor, mostly white residents, such as police brutality, unemployment, slum living conditions. We were fighting urban renewal. We were also fighting class hatred within the city that didn't want us there. So we were made by the police and Mayor Daley, who didn't want, Southern migrants or any other poor people in his city. But we actually evolved from some street guys who were, kind of hanging around what was called JOIN, Jobs or Income Now, which is a program that was started by the Students for a Democratic Society. And they started, kind of educating some of the poor people in the community as to what they could do, to fight the oppression. And so some of the young guys had dropped out of a street gang and started hanging around JOIN. And decided that they wanted to organize a march on the local police station, which was the Somerdale station, which was already known for its crime. As a matter of fact, it was actually busted in 1959, called the Great Somerdale Scandal, for stolen goods and the cops had their own personal burglaries that they would have to go in and, go in and steal whatever they would. But they were also ruthless killers, these cops, and they had no compassion at all for the Southern people. As a matter of fact, some of the police on the force at that time were members of other gangs at one time that didn't like, the Southern people, so they were known to be pretty brutal. But as time went on, we were contacted by the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party and the Young Lords organization, and formed ourselves into the what was called the Rainbow Coalition. And this was
Hi, I just wanted to let you know that Aaron Dixon is on the line right now. So if you wanted to start having a conversation with him, that would be great.
Okay. All right. But we evolved into the Rainbow Coalition, in which, Aaron and others know about, of course, in Chicago with Fred Hampton. And that's how we started getting organized and setting up free health clinics and, you know, breakfast for children programs, because we actually took on a lot of the direction from the Black Panthers and set up our own 11-point program. So, and I know Aaron was out in Seattle organizing, but anyway, that's basically how we got started. Now we've rebooted and we've become viable again with 9 chapters across the country, and we're doing some other programming, so such as what you're listening to tonight, this podcast. And so we're just pleased to have everybody on here. And okay, Aaron, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing real good. I'm glad you decided, you know, that you can join us. And I know I met Aaron a few years ago. I don't know, 3-4 years ago, up in let's
Caldwell,
see, where
was it?
Caldwell? With Chuck, and you were working on some areas up there with Chuck Armsberry, who was one of the, he was a leader of the Eugene, Oregon chapter of the Young Patriots Party. He may be joining us here later. Anyway, I need to introduce you to Aaron. Aaron has dedicated his life to being working within the civil rights movement and the people's movement. The co-founder of the Seattle chapter of the Black Panther Party, and they'll be celebrating their 50th anniversary next month, in which we will be taking part, and we'll be talking a little bit about that. But he also founded the Central House, which is a nonprofit that provides transitional housing for youth, and was one of the founders of a common house, a senior assisted living facility. He also ran for the Green Party ticket in 2006. Now, what I'd like to say here is some people never gave up being a Panther, and some people never gave up being a Patriot. And so Aaron is certainly one of the people that never gave up but continued working. And there are those of us who have been around for years that are still working within the movement. But anyway, he has an excellent book out called My People Are Rising. And it's about his memoirs of setting up a chapter and his life. And it's just an excellent book. My daughter started reading it. I had to pry it from her hand. You know.
So, Aaron, can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yeah, it's called My People Are Rising, Memoir of a Black Panther Party Captain. And what I did in the book is I started with the history of my family, and which is the history of America and Black America, coming from the South, migrating to Chicago, and eventually my family moving to Seattle, Washington, because it was our family, it was our ancestors, it was our history that really pushed us forward in terms of all of us at that time period getting involved in the struggle. You know, we grew up with the oral tradition, which they don't have anymore. We grew up with a cultural value system that you don't see too much anymore. So all those things help to shape us. And so, you know, I start with that in my book. I also talk about marching with Martin Luther King when I was about 12 years old, and how Martin Luther King inspired me, which eventually led me to join the Black Panther Party after Martin Luther King was assassinated. So I'll talk about all that. The Seattle chapter was the first chapter outside of the state of California. And so I spent 4 years in Seattle, and the rest of my time in the Black Panther Party was spent in in Oakland. So I talk about, you know, I work in Seattle and the assassination attempts on my life in Seattle and the attempted raid, and then moving down to Oakland and working at Central Headquarters and working with Elaine Brown. I became Elaine Brown's bodyguard. She's the first woman leader of the Black Panther Party. And I talk about that time period. So, you know, I thought there's a lot in that book. There's so much in there. I don't know where to begin. You have to get it and read it, but I try to cover as much as I can.
We have a caller on the line. It's the chair of the Huntsville chapter of the Young Patriots Organization, and I'm going to put him on now.
Okay.
Author, you're on the line.
Yep.
Would you like? Do you have a question for High or Mr. Dixon?
Not yet. I haven't heard anything.
Okay. Well, did you want to make a comment?
Hello, I'm from Huntsville, and I'm happy to be on the podcast tonight.
Okay, we're happy to have you from Huntsville. Huntsville, Alabama?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Right on, man. That's where we need it. That's where we need the Patriot Party at.
Is this Aaron Dixon?
Yeah, this is Aaron Dixon.
Would you believe we have a young Aaron Dixon here at Alabama A&M University?
Wow. Wow, that
He's a
is kind of...
former SGA president of Alabama A&M University.
Wow. Okay, right on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, now, one of the announcements I was going to make, I was going to talk about how Arn and I are working up here in Huntsville, and we're going to be having Alicia Garza from Black Lives Matter coming here next month. And this is the way for us just to show how we're, you know, we're still working, you know, across racial lines also. And we have quite a few programs. But I had a question for you, Aaron. Writing your excellent book, and did you witness any type of, you know, like when I'm trying to write, and I'm trying to write about the past, and there were so many things that, you know, that happened in the past with, you know, the police brutality and the murders, and the falsely accused, and I got to a certain point where I had to stop. It just brought back too many, you know, of that time. And it was like a PTSD, you know, that I have. And I'm wondering if you had witnessed the same thing from some of the, you know, from what you had experienced, and also if you could, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I definitely experienced that because there's so much emotion involved, and, you know, so, I mean, we've been holding on to this stuff for so many years, all the things that we went through, and so it was very emotional. You know, I was, tears were coming down my eyes the whole time that I first started writing, and, you know, the first thing you have to do, though, is don't worry about trying to write something that looks right or looks good or has periods or sentence structure. You don't need to worry about that because it's emotional. You just need to write down your emotions. That's the first thing. Just write down your emotions. Don't worry about no paragraphs, no chapter headings or anything. Just write and get all that stuff out. That's the first thing you got to do is get all that stuff out. And then you can go back and start looking at it, and after you, you know, have gone through your emotional period, then you can start, you know, working on it, creating a chapter outline. But, you know, it took me about 12, 14 years to write my book. I had four different manuscripts. The final manuscript, I must have edited it about maybe 20 or 30 times. You know, writing is a long process. It's a long process, and you just got to be dedicated to, you know, starting and completing it.
Yeah. Right. Now,
so speaking, can we talk about past for a minute? And I want to talk about the past as it relates to the future. You know, I'm 40 years old. I've been doing movement work for 10 years. And there's things that I really would like for people who have more experience than me to address. And there's three things that I hope that High and Mr. Dixon would address for me. And one of those things is accountability. Another one of those things is leadership. What's the right way to be a leader? And the other thing that I would like specifically for me, since I am a white guy, is like, how do you deal with whiteness in the movement? So I would love to hear Mr. Dixon and High discuss this so that I could be able to learn from their experience.
Okay. When you say accountability, what do you mean?
I mean, so in my experience in Birmingham, you know, I have relationships with a lot of different types of people, and a lot of them have ideas about how I should conduct myself. And I'm curious as to how you pick who you listen to, who do you listen to, you know, and how is it even possible to be accountable to everyone you have relationships with? Or should you sort of pick the people who are closest to you in your community and be accountable to them? But if you do that, it's sort of an echo chamber. So I'm just curious, as I work through the things that we're going through in Birmingham, I want to think about how the best way I can be, you know, an accountable leader to the people in my community.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing is everybody is not going to share your point of view or your ideas. You have to kind of, in terms of when you're starting off, you have to try to find people that are kind of like you, have a like-minded, like you in terms of how they feel and, you know, their compassion for the movement. You know, as far as being accountable, I'm not still quite not sure what you mean, but you know, you do have to conduct yourself, and if you're out there organizing and working for the people and trying to get people on your side, you do have to conduct yourself in a certain manner that is respectful of other people and respectful about yourself. You know, you have an obligation. You know, that was one thing in the party that really helped us, because we had we had revolutionary principles, and we had an ideology, and we had rules. So we had a lot of things that guided us, you know, that kind of kept us in formation, if you want to say. And so we were accountable to those things. We were accountable to our rules. We were accountable to our principles, our revolutionary principles, in terms of how we treat other people. You know, we read a lot. We had to read a lot. We had to read 2 hours a day. You know, we studied Mao, and we studied all the other movements. We used a little red book. We used a lot of things in the red book to kind of guide us in how we act and carry ourselves. For example, never take a needle or a piece of thread from the masses. You know, just different things like that. And so I think that's one of the things that is really hard for young people today, is because, and it was hard for us until the Black Panther Party came along, that kind of gave us a foundation and a guideline in which to move and operate from. But, you know, you have to kind of, until then, you got to kind of develop your own kind of principles, you know, revolutionary principles or community principles, and your own kind of ideology, and doing a lot of reading. It's important to do a lot of reading.
Yeah, and you know, one of the areas that made the young patriots more accountable was the we had the 11-point program too, that we had modeled, you know, after the Black Panthers. And we have a 7-point program now, too, that we want, you know, the people that are with the members that are with the Young Patriots to conform to or to work in. Now, there's some accountability there because we have to be accountable to those programs in those that 7-point program. And that's how, if we're starting to organize new chapters or talk to people about chapters, we ask them, or we say that you must take this 7-point program that we have and work to identify the ones that it's important to you that you work with. And also to have the rules of conduct, you know, like Aaron's talking about within the organization itself. In other words, you can't be very misogynistic and work, you know, and work with the women's movement. You know, and you can't be a white supremacist and work within this organization. So, you know, what we try to talk about is the whiteness within our organization. We talked about that all the way through. We started the Young Patriots, and we have to get people to understand. And you know, I know Zach, you're talking about bringing up the point about whiteness. In my opinion, every white person is a racist, you know, because of the ways and how they're and what they're born into. If there's any such thing as a white anti-racist, because this country, as you know, was founded on white supremacy and it's still run by white supremacy, and we as whites have not witnessed personally a lot of what people of non-color have, and that's something that's very important, because the whole society that we live in was set up by whites to dominate, and it still dominates. So it is very important for any white person to understand that they are racist because of what they're born into. You can call it privilege or whatever, but they're certainly, you know, we're certainly treated different from people of color. And so I think it's really important to, you know, for people to realize that. And that's something that, you know, that's something that we talk about. We try to talk about within the Young Patriots, and to talk about how you may think that you are not racist. You know, people say, "Well, I got black friends," or, you know, "I'm not a racist." Well, if you come right down to it, you really are. And in my opinion, in any type of in this movement that working in and working with non-whites, non-white people, people of color, is that I don't think we can be leaders in a movement. We can lead organizations in certain parts of the movement, but when we start talking about, you know, full-fledged revolution, I don't think that we could even we could lead that because of what we have been taught and ingrained in our culture. You know, in being raised as white. And so I don't think we can really understand what the, even though we may have gone through, you know, some of the same oppressive conditions as blacks or other non-whites, I don't think we can really understand it because we really haven't witnessed it to the degree that non-white people have. Does that make sense, or...
Yeah, I appreciate the answers from both of you, and it I think it's the type of stuff that our listeners would really like to hear, and I think it's conversations that are important to have, and it's especially important for people who are younger to hear from the wisdom of people who have done the work for many, many years. So I deeply appreciate what both of you have said.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, we were threatened much more back in those days, as Aaron will attest. We were, you know, I mean, we were murdered. People were murdered and brutalized, and women were raped, and people were put in jail falsely, and it was just all kinds of the COINTELPRO coming down on us. So, but the people in the white community, such as Uptown, as poor as we were, we didn't witness it to the same degree as people, did on, say, the south side of Chicago or the west side of Chicago or in the brown communities, for instance, or even the American Indian.
I think that's what I appreciated about Mr. Dixon's book was the amount of repression that was placed on movements at that time. And I count myself lucky. I've been threatened by the Klan about 10 years ago, but there's never really been any type of serious repression on our movements here in Birmingham. And that could change, of course. But I count myself lucky that I'm able to do this type of work with a degree of security that didn't exist in the 60s and 70s. And I think that the work of the people in the 60s and 70s has made it so that we could have movements with less repression today.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to understand that too, that they need to understand the history, I think, so they can understand what's going on now. And I think that's what we really have to get out and do, and, have those kinds of classes and talk about classism too, and classism and how that is happening, within the white, white communities.
Mr. Dixon, would you mind commenting on the stuff that we just said?
Let me see. Is anything specific? Go ahead. I need you to help me a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. It's a bad question. I'm sorry. I would like to hear your comments specifically on the lack of repression of movements today, and how we may have, in some ways, greater opportunity to get change if our movements could mature, than there was in past years with COINTELPRO and, all that sort of stuff. And I would like to get your opinion as to if we do have greater opportunities today, maybe than y'all did in the past.
Well, I would say no. I would say you don't, because things have changed. This is a different time period now. When I was growing up, when Hi and I were growing up, there were four TV channels, and they went off at 11 o'clock. So now they have 300 TV channels, and they're on 24 hours. When I was growing up, the journalists had integrity. Today, the journalists don't have integrity. The news media is controlled by corporations. When I was growing up, that wasn't the case. So the level of brainwashing that has taken place over the last 40 years, I mean, there was already brainwashing going on, but at least our generation, we were connected to history. We were more closely connected to our history than young people are today. So there has been this thing that has been created, this facade that has been created, that people are really, in many ways, they're almost like zombies. People really are like zombies. Now, you got all this technical equipment. You got everything is 24 hours, 24 hours CNN, 24 hours Fox, just constantly bombarded. During our time, every city had an alternative newspaper. Some cities had two alternative newspapers. You can't find an alternative. I'm talking about political alternative newspapers. You can't find alternative newspapers now because they've gotten rid of them. We had the Black Panther newspaper, which was an alternative newspaper. So it's much more difficult now than it was when we came along. They had repression back then, but the repression here is different. You got 2.5 million people in prison, most of them black and Latino. 2.5 million people in prison. That is so bizarre. You know, the prison industrial complex, and we're in these endless wars. We got this endless wars going on. We got cycles and cycles of young people going to Afghanistan and Iraq and now Syria, just constant war for the last, you know, 10, 15 years or so. So it is much more difficult now. You guys have it a lot more difficult. Plus, they got the Patriot Act. They put the Patriot Act in place with all these draconian laws and rules. So if you do fuck up and they do decide to go after your ass, you're messed up. So no, it is a much different situation now. You have to really, really be creative and really use your imagination. And it's really important to read. And, you know, trying to educate other people, that was our goal. That was always our goal in the party and the movement back then was raising the consciousness of the people. And that's still something that has to be done. But you have a harder job of doing it because the brainwashing has been so complete. Plus, the other thing is individualism. We didn't have individualism. When High and I grew up, people were very communal. We shared everything. Everybody shared everything, you know. You know, you could go to the corner grocery store with no money and get what you need for the week, and you go back and pay them. You know, we have that type of community. You know, we don't have those types of communities anymore. You know, individualism has been pushed upon us, and we become very narcissistic. So, you know, those are the things that you guys are up against.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about the social media, the news, all that, is that if you watch a news channel that doesn't agree with you, you can always find another one that does. You know, so that's just gonna encourage you in your belief. You know, and back in those days, we used the word liberation. We don't even hear that word anymore, to liberate. Because most people don't even feel that they need to be liberated, you know?
Right, right.
And most of that is coming from the indoctrination. And as I use the term fake news, you know, so people don't see themselves as needing to be liberated, even though they're oppressed and poor. But then, you know, you have to figure out what the definition of the poor is anymore, because that's been so distorted. And like Aaron was saying, you know, you can go back then, you could get credit at a store, but then again, it took the civil rights movement, you know, to get people where they could even get credit to buy a TV or any real material stuff. And so the corporations and the government got smart, and they allowed people to have blanket credit, which therefore put them in more debt, but also convinced the people and indoctrinated the people that they ain't poor because they got that TV or whatever. You know, so it was harder. It's harder somewhat today to organize than it was back then. Because, you know, the Poor People's Campaign talked about poor people, and now people are saying, I'm not poor, you know, this, I got that, but they're living paycheck to paycheck, and some of them can't even afford to eat. So, I would see what Aaron's saying now about it's tougher, a lot tougher for, you know, people to organize, or people to organize especially the poor, because most of them don't even feel that they need to be liberated. You know, and we've seen that in our last election.
So I want to ask this question, and I want to give a little context first. I do basically two things in Alabama and in Birmingham. The first thing that I do is I'm on a team that organizes
cooperatives, worker-owned and consumer-owned cooperatives. So we're working on a grocery store, and we're also working with a doula cooperative here in Birmingham. And I also try to create I try to do cultural anti-racist cultural organizing with white working class Southerners, what I call rednecks. And I would like some advice from the both of you on, you know, what's some strategies that young people could use to be effective organizers and effective activists and effective revolutionaries going forward into the future?
Well, I would think of any kind of
one thing. Go ahead, hi.
No, go ahead, Aaron. That's fine.
No. You go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking. Yeah, you see, we were kind of nice to each other back then too, and we still are. you know, the important thing, you know, if you're talking about organizing, rednecks or whoever, you know, you got to find the commonality. You know, back in the day, people said that the Young Patriots organized because of racism. We didn't. We organized what we had in common. And what we did when we had in common is we were doing what we're doing now. You know, we all have something in common. And everybody had, you know, like their belief in tearing down the system or whatever. The same day you got people who have a belief in white supremacy. A strategy that we used, which was highly controversial, was the use of the Confederate flag. And that was definitely controversial because it meant so many things to so many different people. You know, when we started talking about, you know, anti-racism or, you know, equality, and all that, and we used that flag, we could find people who identified with that flag, but yet again would identify with us. So we found some common ground with people. There's no way you're going to win everybody over, but it's the commonality, I think, you know, that's gonna happen, and that's why the Black Panthers, you know, welcomed us into their organization as equals, you know, even though we're not. And I had said to, you know, in conversations with, you know, Fred Hampton and others about why in the world would you allow us to be in your organization when we were white supremacists, you know, we dominated, we enslaved, we raped, we killed. You know, why would you allow us to even be a part of it? And it was because of commonality, because what we have in common is much stronger, you know, than what we don't have. And his saying was, I'm going to see past that because I can see the revolution. And it's all going to happen with people that have these things in common.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Arthur again. When I look at the history and think back over the history, you know, today we have the LeBron James and we have the guy that's over Microsoft, a bunch of rich folks, whether it's black, white, or whatever. Back in the day, there was Harry Belafonte and some other folks that were involved. And why do you think Harry Belafonte and the folks then, the Kennedys, got involved with some of the things that the Black Panthers and the Young Patriots were doing, and they're not involved with this new day for organizations like the Black Panthers and the Young Patriots?
What was the first part of that question again?
The first part was, you have celebrities and rich people, Harold Belafonte, Muhammad Ali, and, you know, a lot of athletes back in the day. You know, they spoke up for various causes, like the civil rights movement and the Kennedys. You know, they were, you know, supporting, you know, the rights of humans all everywhere. And today,
okay, so you want to know why they're not like that today?
Well, LeBron James and folks are coming out, but I'm trying to figure out why aren't the LeBron James and others supporting organizations like the Black Panthers and the Young Patriots like they did back in the day?
Yeah, well, that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is the level of brainwashing that has gone on and individualism. You know, people are so when you're an individual and you're not connected to your community, then that's how you look at things. You do things in your own interest. You're not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize your career or jeopardize your money. And you're not connected. You're not connected, you know, in terms of humanity, the way that we were, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. So that's why you don't see celebrities and athletes willing to you know, put themselves on the line, because they don't see they see themselves as individuals. They don't see themselves as being connected to the greater whole, the greater good.
Mm-hmm. I would also say, look at the history of the nonprofit system and how the nonprofit system was pretty much developed to siphon off money from radical programs by giving people tax breaks for donations. And there, you know, there was a concerted effort after the 60s and 70s to use the nonprofit system to undercut any kind of radical fundraising type of system. So, I mean, there were structural things along with the brainwashing and that sort of stuff. There was also structural things that were done to ensure that no money would ever find its way into radical organizations in the future. And we've organized for 10 years here in Birmingham, and we've done it with virtually nothing. And, you know, and I don't foresee any money coming either. I don't see it off in the future. So, you know, it's as far as funding goes, it's a rough world for radical organizations, and you just kind of have to plow through it.
Yeah. Well, you got to use your creativity and your imagination.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
There's money out there. As long as there's money out there, you can get it.
Gotcha. Well, one other question I had was, when you look at the history of both of the organizations, you know, Alabama had Stokely Carmichael that came up with the Black Panther originally, right?
Right.
Did the Black
yeah.
Panthers go back to Loudoun County in Alabama as their roots?
Right.
Or not?
Okay. Hello. I think I got this.
No, you're here.
Hello.
You're still here.
You're
I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, what was the last part? The last part you said, Loudoun County, Alabama. That's where the Panther
Loudoun
came
County,
from. That's
Alabama.
Where that symbol.
Yeah, that's where the Black Panther symbol came from, with Stokely Carmichael. And
right.
I was wondering, does the Black Panthers consider their roots going back to Loudoun County with Stokely?
Right, yeah. That's right.
Because when I spoke to a group of high school students recently, they were studying the various parties and movements like the Black Panthers. And in their history book, it did not trace back beyond Oakland and Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, we have
if you know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, right?
Right.
So we have about 15 minutes left, and I want to ask one last question. And I want to ask it to both High and Mr. Dixon. What is your hope for the future?
Go ahead, High. Take it away.
Well, yeah, my hope for the future is that, you know, that we could actually go back to some of what we were doing back in the 60s and 70s, that we can educate people, you know, as to what is really happening in this world today. You know, because I tell you the truth, I see it just, you know, and you're talking about a different type of racism that we saw before. And I think what I would truly like to see is for, you know, is for there would, well, to be a country movement, you know, that we can all get together on and we can all support, you know, in order to make changes within this country, because, you know, the government has their, our government now has their movement, and they're using the word movement, and they're using the word revolution, you know, and those are the tactics that they're using, you know, and they've taken their, a lot of their tactics from, you know, from what we did in the past, and, you know, grassroots organization and grassroots politics started by, you know, the poor people's movement. And I'd like to see that happen again, because I really want to see, you know, unity within this country. And I talk a lot about unity and trying to get people to, you know, to work together. And I don't think a lot is going to happen until we do that, until we can get our own candidates, until we can change the system, is what I'm saying. To change the, we're going to have to go back and reinstitute some of the laws that were instituted back in the civil rights days, because Trump destroyed those laws. So we got to go back again somehow and get those laws changed. It's either that or just have to overthrow this government, you know, because I don't see any other viable alternative, because, you know, we're controlled by the 1% now, and that ain't about to change, you know. And I think it's only going to get worse unless we all get together somehow in some type of a movement and pull everything together.
Yeah,
you know, I'm talking about people's movement.
Yeah, that's what we need. Conditions are only going to get worse, and I just hope that as conditions do get worse, that will bring people more closely together and help people to really understand that we really are, we're one human race. And the only way that we can change things is through people power, you know, the power of the people.
Yep. That's right. Through a people's movement. That's right.
Okay, Hi Thurman and Aaron Dixon, I really appreciate y'all being on the first episode is When the World is on Fire. For anybody who doesn't know, that line is a line from an old Hank Williams song. And, you know, sort of there was the Hank Williams thing that they were doing up in Uptown with the Young Patriots that never really got done. Hang on, we got one more caller. Let me put this caller on.
Okay.
Hello, this is Zach Henson. Can I get your name? Whoops.
Hey, hi. I'm going to have to hop off the phone. I got another conference call coming up in a few minutes.
We'll talk soon about Seattle, okay?
Okay, all right. And thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank y'all, and I look forward to meeting you in person one day, Mr. Dixon. It was really a pleasure to meet you, and it was a pleasure to read your book today.
Okay, you guys ought to bring me out there to Alabama.
Yeah, y'all come out here. We'd love to have you. We'll bring you out here for sure.
Yeah, bring me out there to one of them colleges or universities.
Okay, hang on, we got a caller. We got a caller that I think wants to ask a question.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Kat. And I'm, I can hear you.
Hey, Kat. Hello, Kat. This is Hank.
I'm calling because I've been super excited about this podcast, and I just had a question for the two of y'all.
Tell us who you are at first.
My name is Kat. I organize and kind of in the maybe one of the most racist places in the United States. I live in Arkansas, and I live in a predominantly white part of Arkansas that has no real minorities because of race riots in the 1950s, and everybody has been comfortable to just let them stew.
Yeah.
So
Kat is also
what's your question?
She's also
Kat?
The chairman. Yeah.
My question is, what do we do in this day and age in cities and states that are so unbelievably like Southern institutionalized racism? Like most of the cops in the area are okay with the Klan. As a matter of fact, they organize with the Klan in my town. So what are some steps people can start taking now to uproot that?
Well, you know, Ken, it seems like you're already doing some of that in terms of people who, you know, who are likewise thinking like you do, and bringing it to the attention of, you know, of the community. And it's kind of hard because when the community is controlled by the Klan, it's very, very difficult. But
yeah.
I think you need to reach out and get more support, you know, even from other chapters or other organizations that can, you know, that can somehow make some type of a coalition, you know, to show them that you know you are serious, what you are, but to show them that, you know, there's power in numbers, and maybe there's some kind of a program or rally or something like that that can be done, you know, and that can bring some people together, because I think you might run into other people who not as racist, but need some, you know, some outlet, you might say, as an
Kat,
alternative
would,
to the Klan.
Kat, the thing that has really worked for me, and I say worked in a very loose term because I'm not sure anything works that well, but using the idea of class solidarity to help poor white folks realize that black people and other people of color aren't their enemies. And that's like the first step. And I say that because that's how I learned it. You know, I grew up neo-Confederate, you know, loved Sean Hannity, was on Sean Hannity's show as a 12-year-old, you know, the whole nine yards. And when I started learning about class, I started to question my white supremacist views. And I think that is what I try to do with my work with rednecks. But it's, like I said, there's not a silver bullet. It's like it takes a long-term relationship building and getting people to trust you and then slowly but surely showing them that there's a better way.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And I know it might be a pretty standard question, but I feel like a lot of people that might listen to y'all's podcast might just be like kind of discovering how to get active. And I feel like it's good to like help those people out too, like let them know how to get started, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call.
Thank y'all for doing the podcast.
Thanks, Kat.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, hi. You want to have any final last words? We got about 6 minutes left, so you want to have any last words?
Well, yeah. We continue this podcast, and I think as far as you know, I do have some announcements as far as what the Young Patriots are doing. If you you know, and of course we can talk about Huntsville, and Alicia Garza visit is going to be two visits, one at the Alabama A&M University on Friday, the 6th of April, and then Saturday the 7th will be one in the community, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, they need to show they're coming because of their basically their respect for the young patriots and coming to talk to people about, you know, the Poor People's Campaign and, of course, Black Lives Matter. You know, so, and then March 29th is in Chicago. We have a program at the Oak Park Library on the explosive 60s in which we're bringing people and trying to talk to them about what happened, basically the same thing that we're talking about tonight. Now, there is also a benefit coming up, in April 21st in Chicago, water is a human right, and to try to, we have people from Flint, Michigan coming to talk, and also it will be a musical and speech presentation for the People's Tribune, which is about the only alternative newspaper around that I know of. And the Healing Corner and the Young Patriots. The Healing Corner is a group that I think we're going to eventually bring to Alabama. In Chicago, we go into the hardcore neighborhoods where there's been a lot of gang activity, police activity, people that's been, you know, shot up there or murdered, gang violence, and we go in and set up on a corner, and we have the people come out and talk about what they can possibly do and to get involved. So there's quite things happening. Also, Aaron will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Seattle Black Panther chapter, April 26th and 28th. So we will be partaking in that. And the Young Lord 50th will be in Chicago in August, and then the Black Panthers will be in October, November, somewhere in there. But we're continuing, you know, to organize chapters around the country. So we just have to keep going. You know, no matter what the cost, we have to keep going. And so I just look forward to, you know, hearing some more of the podcast here. We also have a newsletter that we distribute now that we've started, and in hopes of someday, you know, at the end of the year, we have a new documentary coming out called The Original Rainbow Coalition, and I think that'll be something that'll be very worth. But anyway, thanks for having me on there.
Thank you, Hi. And as we wrap up, I want to tell everybody, you can find us on Facebook, the Young Patriots Organization, the Young Patriots Organization Birmingham, and Confessions of a Mad Redneck. And if anybody is interested in sponsoring the When the World is on Fire podcast, please get in touch with us through social media, and we'll set up something where you can sponsor the podcast. Appreciate everybody coming on. Appreciate Mr. Dixon coming on. Appreciate Hi coming on. Appreciate Art coming on. And we will see y'all in a month. Thank you very much. Peace, y'all.